Vice President J.D. Vance scolds European governments about democracy, stealing the spotlight from the Ukraine-Russian peace talks.
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
The changing relationship between the United States and Europe.
What you're seeing at the beginning of what I would call not the United States as European power, but the United States simply as another power in Europe. And the U.S. as a power in Europe, not a European power, will operate according to a different playbook.
Today is Friday, February 14th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
Europe faces many challenges, but the crisis this continent faces right now, the crisis I believe we all face together, is one of our own making.
U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance, addressing European leaders at a security conference in Munich on Friday, saying it appears that they are drifting from true democracy.
If you're running in fear of your own voters, there is nothing America can do for you. Nor, for that matter, is there anything that you can do for the American people who elected me and elected President Trump. You need democratic mandates to accomplish anything of value in the coming years. Have we learned nothing that thin mandates produce unstable results? But there is so much of value that can be accomplished with the kind of democratic mandate that I think will come from being more responsive to the voices of your citizens.
Vance telling the conference that he believes some European nations appeared to be acting like the nations that were defeated during the Cold War.
And unfortunately, when I look at Europe today, it's sometimes not so clear what happened to some of the Cold War's winners. I look to Brussels, where EU commissars warn citizens that they intend to shut down social media during times of civil unrest the moment they spot what they've judged to be, quote, hateful content. Or to this very country, where police have carried out raids against citizens suspected of posting anti-feminist comments online as part of, quote, combating misogyny on the internet, a day of action. I look to Sweden, where 2 weeks ago the government convicted a Christian activist for participating in Quran burnings that resulted in his friend's murder. And as the judge in his case chillingly noted, Sweden's laws to supposedly protect free expression do not, in fact, grant, and I'm quoting, a free pass to do or say anything without risking offending the group that holds that belief.
Many European leaders expressed dismay with the vice president's comments, including German defense minister Boris Pistorius, who said Vance's comments were unacceptable. He said he strongly disagrees that minority voices were being silenced. Here he is from a Sky News social media post on X.
But democracy does not mean that a vociferous minority will automatically be right and they cannot decide what truth is. It does not mean that anyone can say anything, and democracy must be able to defend itself against extremists that try to destroy it. I am happy to live in Europe where this democracy is defended every day against its internal and external enemies. And therefore, I would like to explicitly contradict and oppose the impression that Vice President Vance suggested here that our democracies oppress and silence minorities. We not only know against whom we defend our countries, but also what we defend it for. It's for democracy, for freedom of opinion, for the rule of law, and the dignity of each and every one, ladies and gentlemen.
The German president made even stronger comments saying, quote, what is certain is that the new American administration has a different world view to ours, one that has no regard for established rules established partnerships and trust, end quote.
European leaders were hoping to focus heavily on a plan to end Russia's war in Ukraine. Vance and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky did meet on the sidelines of the conference to discuss strategies on bringing the war to an end. Vance emphasized that the U.S. wants to achieve lasting peace.
It's important for us to get together and start to have the conversations that are going to be necessary to bring this thing to a close. That's all I'm going to say for now, because I want to preserve the optionality here from the negotiators and our respective teams to bring this thing to a responsible close.
Expressing gratitude for U.S. support, Zelensky said he will only agree to meet in person with Russia's Vladimir Putin after a common plan is negotiated with President Donald Trump.
First of all, I don't want to meet just with Russians, just to meet for what? No, we see the order of meetings, as I said. The order is United States, Europe, then Russia. Be ready to this meeting.
He also warned leaders not to take Putin's word that he will not stop invading Ukraine just because he says he will. Let's get some analysis on the conference developments. Joining us now is Daniel S. Hamilton, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute of Johns Hopkins University.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. We appreciate it. Let's just start with your overall thoughts on Vice President Vance's speech.
Well, I think he missed an opportunity to speak to the Europeans concerned about European security. It's the Munich Security Conference. His point, though, was to say, as he did, that he thought the main security threat to Europe was, as he said, from within, not from without. And he pointed to episodes to bolster his case that there's a retreat in Europe, he said, from free expression, free speech, that some political parties that are seen on the periphery are, you know, blocked from full participation in the political process. He referred to the election in Romania, where a presidential candidate came out of nowhere, heavily influenced by social media, financed by Russia, to win a round in the presidential election, and a court in Romania decided to cancel the whole process and have new elections. He cited that as, you know, suppression of free information. So, and then he went on to say, you know, unvetted migration was a great danger to Europe. There was a car accident in Munich, just a few blocks from the hotel where this event is happening, and it turns out it was an extreme Islamic extremist who ran into a group of demonstrators and severely injured many people. So he used that as an example of how extremist immigration is a danger to Europe. So those were his highlights. He didn't really speak much to, you know, the main themes of the security conference, which are, of course, what's going on with Ukraine, what's going on with Putin, what about the U.S. Demanding Europe pay for its own defense. His colleague, Secretary Hegseth, said that you can't count on the U.S. being in Europe forever. So he didn't have an opportunity to engage with very senior people all across the alliance on any of those questions.
It seems to me like there's a changing dynamic here, like we're sort of distancing ourselves from Europe and offering a branch to Russia and changing the dynamic of a very long relationship.
Well, my quick way of saying this, I think you're right. My quick way of saying it is that for 80 years, the United States was a European power, meaning we were integrally involved with all of the elements that brought the continent security, prosperity, defended against the Soviet Union. You know, our troops anchored European defense, our companies were heavily engaged, our politicians and diplomats were part of all the intricate compromises, you know, and coalitions the Europeans themselves constructed. We were a source of reassurance for the Europeans, not only about the Soviet Union or Russia, but about each other. You know, it was the Europeans who got us into two world wars when they couldn't get along. I think a secondary thing which people don't say in polite company, we reassure the Europeans about Germany, and we reassure the Germans about themselves after two World Wars, and then, of course, German unification, which many were concerned about. But the U.S. said, you know, these are all good things. We'll stick by you. And I believe starting not with the Trump administration, but before that, frankly, there was a sort of a sense in the United States that those kinds of instinctual interests in Europe, that Europe was the center of global order, that an unstable Europe, you know, had ripple effects all around the world, that Europe was not only important, but it was urgent, seemed to fade away. And now what you're seeing at the beginning of what I would call not the United States as a European power, but the United States simply as another power in Europe. And the U.S. as a power in Europe, not a European power, will operate according to a different playbook. It's not necessarily involved in, you know, all the compromises and coalitions the Europeans want to create. It could be as much a source of anxiety for Europe as a source of reassurance. It can play spoiler, not just stakeholder, when it sees it an advantage to do so. It can play the Europeans off against each other rather than to work with the European Union, because it's so easy to do sometimes. And that's a very different United States than the one that the Europeans and generations of Americans have become accustomed to.
What about the meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky? Because, as you mentioned, I think the European leaders that were in attendance were definitely wanting to focus on how to end the war. The vice president did meet on the sidelines. But it was sort of confusing what the ultimate message is. Zelensky said Trump is key to ending the Russia-Ukraine conflict. So on the one hand, it seems like, you know, he's counting on the U.S. I'm just wondering what your take was on that part of the story.
Right. Well, there were two, I think, major developments there. One was Zelensky's meeting with Vance and Rubio and company in Munich. But of course, the president talked to Putin earlier in the week, and that set more the stage for the subsequent talks in Munich. President called Zelensky right after he called Putin. So it wasn't that Zelensky didn't have a chance to talk to the president directly. So I believe that Zelensky went into the meeting with Vance already having had some sense from President Trump sort of where things might be going. Zelensky, according to reports, told Vance, you know, we're not going to participate in any type of negotiation unless we have real security guarantees. And Zelensky has said firmly that the Europeans by themselves are not going to be able to provide those security guarantees. So that goes head on into what senior officials from the U.S. have said this week about any force that would, you know, patrol a ceasefire would not consist of any U.S. forces. The second thing that Zelensky said was, absolutely no recognition of Russian-occupied territory in Ukraine. He said, that's the absolute red line for us. We're never going to do it. So I think that was his message. I had no indication what Vice President said in response. But, you know, it's just starting into a conversation. I think the other element here that's got all the Europeans at a tizzy is that there's no mention of Europe being part of any of these negotiations, even though the Europeans are going to be asked to, you know, own the result. So there's a lot of drama going on, a lot of anxiety.
Well, we did hear when it first happened, the phone call first happened, that Europe was disappointed that they weren't consulted even on the phone calls being made, certainly not happy that they weren't part of that decision-making process. There are people that believe that the world is changing. Europe is, for lack of a better word, withering. Its economy You know, 3 decades ago, the European Union's GDP was about 70% of the United States. Today, it's about 50%. There's a concept that the world is becoming more transactional, less dependent on these kind of alliances, something that Trump senses. And do you think he's gambling on the future lies with Russia and China and not Europe so much?
This is my personal view. I think the president believes we are in a Hobbesian, you know, world of states competing for power, and that the only sort of peer, countries with whom he should cut deals, the other great powers, are Russia and China. And that's why he acts differently with them than he does with almost anyone else. I would argue that Europe is just as robust as it has always been. Its share of GDP is smaller because the world itself has grown bigger. It's really the U.S. that's outdistanced everybody, if you look at any of the statistics. Europe's doing, you know, quite well in many areas, so I wouldn't downplay them. And the point is simply that if you turn to the other big news this week, of course, all the tariffs and the announcement of more to come, the notion that this relationship is unbalanced because of trade in goods. We have a trade deficit in goods with the European Union, but we have a trade surplus in services trade with the European Union. It doesn't quite balance out, but it's not off kilter. Our deficits with Asia-Pacific countries are 3 times what they are with Europe, and yet you don't hear much about that. So there's something else going on that's not really about any of these things. It's simply to sort of show who's boss and set people or disorient them, distract them. That's the president's tactic usually with anybody.
Would you say that this is giving China an opening?
Well, so far, yes, because you see immediately after Vice President Vance spoke, the Chinese leadership spoke in Munich. And they spoke to the themes of the conference. And they have offered their good services to help bring an end to the war in Ukraine, being the negotiator between Russia and the United States. It seems the president might be entertaining that. They have said to the Europeans, look what you just heard. Why would we have a fight with each other? We're reasonable people. So, if you retreat from some of these commitments with your allies, there's a vacuum, and into the vacuum comes the other great powers.
When I heard China speak, it occurred to me, wow, that sounds like we used to sound like.
Yes, they chose to be very, diplomatic and conciliatory. Of course, the reality is different, but that's in a stage like that, it's all about posturing and what's your message. And today the message from them was, let's work it out. And the message from the United States was, you guys are hopeless.
Well, there was one point at which Vice President Vance actually said to the conference, if you can't do this, it was in the part he was talking about they're suppressing the extreme left and extreme right parties. And he said, we were elected, and if you can't listen to all of your voters, there's nothing we can do for you, and there's nothing you can do for us. Kind of like the reverse Kennedy line, right?
Right. Well, these are rhetorical flourishes. I don't know quite what that would mean. He said at the same time at the beginning of his speech that we remain committed to Europe. We remain committed to our alliance. And the president has said that, too, after the defense secretary put that in question. So it is. There are a lot of mixed messages going on. Let's say that charitably.
Sounds like European leaders are concerned that the Trump administration is sort of trying to change the narrative and the legitimacy of the Russian president.
Well, I think he did that this week. He said that Putin had a legitimate reason for invading Ukraine. He has said in the past he didn't think, you know, people in Crimea are basically Russian anyway, even though they're not. So, you know, he's done that. He said Russia should come into the G8 again, even though Putin is an indicted war criminal. And if he sets foot out of Russia, most countries are obliged to arrest him. So, you know, he did give huge legitimacy to Vladimir Putin.
Is it a wise strategy, though, to bring Russia back into the conversation and try to end this war and other issues with Russia?
Well, no one should ever not want to discuss things with the Russians, but if you're going to negotiate, you don't give away all your leverage, as Secretary Hegseth did earlier in the week by saying Ukraine is never going to join NATO, you can't count on us, we're not going to be there, you have to do all this yourself. Those are half the negotiating points that you'd have in a negotiation. They threw them out the window. They were walked back by the president. Senator Risch, you know, Republican, head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said that was a rookie mistake, he called it. He said he sort of dumped on the defense secretary like he doesn't know what he's doing. That was a Republican. So I think it's early days for this administration. You can see they're not all on message. And at a time of war and a time of great anxiety in Europe, all of that came out this week. So I think that's what we're dealing with is, you know, what's the real story here? And I don't think the administration has really got it together yet.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and explain all of this. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
That was Daniel S. Hamilton, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute of Johns Hopkins University.
You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
For more news throughout the week, 24 hours a day, check out our website at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London. We'll chat with you soon.